The government is on high alert for insider threats. From shootings on military bases to security leaks, it may seem like your colleague could turn into your agency's worst nightmare. And agencies are struggling with the appropriate ways to mitigate those threats. For more, we turn to Mike Gellis. He's a former chief psychologist for the Naval Criminal Investigative Service, and he's now with Deloitte. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Emily.
So let me start with this question. Are insider threats becoming more pervasive in the federal government, or does it just seem that way?
Well, I think that's it's difficult to say. Are we seeing an increased number from the past because we're paying much closer attention to them? But I think it's fair to say that this is very sensitive in nature, and the fact is that we are seeing more and more of these because I think of the way we're doing business. You know, it used to be that we would do business in the world of bricks and mortar, and now that we're in an environment where most business is done virtually, we're seeing that there's an increase in the way people are sharing and moving information. Thus, it provides opportunities to exploit information in a very different way than we did in the past. So, in my opinion, I do believe we're seeing an increase in these, but we're also paying much more closer attention to it as it relates to being able to pick up on these behaviors in a different way than we used to.
And you're a psychologist by training, so are people becoming increasingly more bold when it comes to these things? I mean, what accounts for it in people's minds?
You know, that's a great question. I think one of my thoughts about this is that, in essence, when people are operating in the world of bricks and mortar, if you follow me, we're sort of regulated by external constraint about what people can see and how they view the behavior of what we do. When you go into the world of bits and bytes, and that's subject more to internal constraint. And I think there is more comfort when people believe that they can't be monitored or their behavior isn't being observed, that there tends to be a little less constraint in what they do. And I think that begins to account for a lot of what we're beginning to see.
And perhaps there is also sort of a knowledge gap there, because all those bits and bytes people might have specialized knowledge where the rest of us don't really know what they're doing, right? Because we might not understand that world of cyber.
I think that's right, but I also think, you know, people have become pretty tech savvy, and this new generation is actually pretty tech savvy. And so people are really very comfortable with, more comfortable these days than ever, moving information around or sharing information. Maybe I should emphasize this. When we talk about insider threat, I think we need to look at it from three specific arenas. One is, clearly there are individuals out there who have malevolent intent. And historically, we've been watching that for many, many years and paying attention to it. The two other buckets that become very important are those who are complacent and those who are ignorant. So if you follow me from my earlier sort of thought, the idea that we're starting to do more and more business in the virtual space, then those who are not, if there aren't hard, fast policy rules and the appropriate training, people are going to do things that they don't feel are important, or they're going to do things because they're just ignorant. And as a result, they're opening up all sorts of opportunities to either be facilitated or to be exploited from the inside by someone else or the outside. So I think that becomes an important piece of this as well.
Recently, the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, issued a memo to all intelligence employees basically saying, don't talk to the press, and letting just a few authorized officials talk to the press. And this went for classified or unclassified information. Many people think this is a very strong move. I want to ask you, overall, how do you think the government is addressing insider threats?
Well, actually, you know, historically, the government has always paid attention to insider threat. It's always been viewed as pretty much a high-impact, low-frequency event. And with my history, I've been involved with insider threat for probably 27 years, between the government for 20 or so and Deloitte for 8. Today, I think the government's doing much better. Let me articulate this. There's been the executive order by the president in 2011, executive order 13587. There's been the National Insider Threat Policy and the NIST guidelines that have come up on how to set up a program. That being said, I think the government has moved out in a very different pace depending on the agencies. And so what we're seeing is a real difference in the level of maturity of the different programs. With that being said, insider threat sort of is still not clearly defined by many people. Some people would believe if I have my IT systems being monitored, then in essence I have an insider threat program, where truly an insider threat program should be looking at and trying to identify patterns of behavior that are different, that are anomalous, that essentially look at the whole person. So while you can look at what somebody's doing in the virtual space, and that's critical to monitor, you know, sort of excessive downloads or where are they going on sites that are irrelevant to their job, one also has to look at where are they going in the building. Have they been trying to go to places that are irrelevant? Are they looking to go to spaces again and again where they've been denied? So the key is, How does the government continue to get consistency across these programs and get programs mature to the point where they're holistic, where they're really looking just for what people do, patterns of behavior that are anomalous, and not just looking at one part of the equation versus the other?
We're speaking with the psychologist Mike Gellis, a director of Deloitte Consulting. When we're talking about the different types of insider threats, I mean, recently there were several shootings on military bases. That's the bricks and mortars kind. Or we can talk about the NSA contractor Edward Snowden. That's the bits and bytes kind. Are there similar characteristics, or do agencies have to treat these types of things differently?
That's a great question, and I think that's a question many people are struggling with. And for years, I was always trying to see whether you could look at workplace violence and the exploitation of information pretty much like peanut butter and chocolate. Probably not to that extent. However, there are things that are similar. These are not impulsive acts. People follow a path of idea to action. So if we understand that someone is following a path of idea to action, and we can understand what those specific behaviors are, because in many instances, whether it's violence or it's going to be the exploitation of some type of information, an individual has access, has a particular crisis, and has a disposition, as we talked before, to do this. Therefore, they start on this path. If we can understand and begin to pay attention to those behaviors, whether it's and looking at them, if you will, as data elements, we can begin to identify these behaviors and look at how they're different from baseline behavior of an employee, we can interrupt forward motion. That's the other key principle. So, yes, in essence, we can follow, or if we can develop the appropriate approach and develop the appropriate policies, we can interrupt forward motion earlier. Can we prevent all these acts? I would never want to say we could prevent them all, but we surely can be doing a better job. And in essence, we can be addressing both of those challenges you articulated in looking at it from that conceptual perspective.
Meanwhile, what can agencies do, or what should they be doing, to prevent these threats but not trample on would-be whistleblowers? I mean, people who are challenging agencies because they see something wrong happening in the agency.
Right. Well, what we're not doing here is looking to profile anyone, and what we're not doing here necessarily is looking to point the finger at anyone. What we're trying to do is to be able to look at for anomalous behavior, as I keep saying. Those are behaviors that begin to look very different than what a person has been normally doing, that basically indicates that they are engaging behaviors that are of a certain concern to the organization. By being able to identify that, so interestingly enough, behavior can be captured sort of in some tools that facilitate the use of technology that then lead to having a conversation with that person. So therefore, the idea here is to be able to, as I said earlier, interrupt forward motion by being able to identify a person sooner in the process, and they'll go back to a human interaction and a conversation and exploration as to why are these things occurring. And I think at that point in time, there are other protections for people who may have motivations to whistleblow versus people who have motivations to commit espionage or to commit workplace violence.
So basically what you're saying is behavior first. Watch the behavior before you institute some sort of blanket policy on everyone.
Exactly. And it's very interesting how you link behavior and policy, because organizations need to develop very clear policies, because policies, in essence, Emily, define behavioral expectations for the employees. And if that's clearly articulated and communicated, reinforced in training, then you have individuals who should be aware of what their behavior is expected to be. And when it then goes outside of that realm, sure, behavior is going to be the key link to what a person is doing. It's not who a person is, but what a person's doing that should give us at least insight to protect the workforce and to protect the public to be able to interrupt forward motion and have a conversation a lot sooner than a post-incident investigation.
Mike Gellis is a director of Deloitte Consulting and the former chief psychologist for the Naval Criminal Investigative Service. Mike, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Emily.